Today is Sunday, November 28th, 2020, and I just apologize. I'm told that on the YU website there's a comment that I should speak into the recorder. We have no recorder. It's an MP3. I don't understand how it works. It's the size of two fingers. If that can record Torah, I'm a Chinaman on the moon. And I apologize because my old system, when I recorded myself with audios, the recordings came out perfect. And as you all know, those who are following the Shurim, we had to drop the old system because we can't get audios, we can't get the tapes, we can't get the cassettes today. So I apologize, but my right hand, David Pardo, has just placed the gizmo closer to me. So I hope this will make a bit of a difference. And, you know, can you look at the website, David? See if people let us know that it's clearer. Let David know that it's clearer, so we'll feel a little bit better about it. Okay, I want to roll. We have a world to do today, a world to do tomorrow. Menachem, right? Okay, Menachem. I just want to state that what I began this year with last week became all the more important this week. And for survival as the Yerusha Mayim, as someone who tries to be a Talmud, who will become a Chacham one day, to paraphrase the Rav, I have to separate Gedolei Torah from politics and Hashkafa. That comes, it goes, you can't let it upset you. You have to stand and revere Rav Avadji Yosef. We don't have a Lamdan like him in this generation. There's no one that comes close to him. But when it comes to what's going on in the country and all the headlines and the politics, I'm certainly more in Rav Amsalem's camp than in Rav Avadji's camp. But then again, everyone says it's not Rav Avadji, it's those surrounding him. And as I alluded to, I can give you many examples of this. I spoke about the Satan Rebbe last week. I spoke about what happened to me when I quoted him once, twice. I spoke about Rav Chaim Moshe Grishinsky. Rav Chaim Moshe Grishinsky, Sarah, is an unbelievable, important example. But I will get there in great depth in the Monday class when I come into the Holocaust and Zionism. And then I'll deal with Rav Chaim Moshe, Rav Chatzkel Levenstein. There's a world of material. But that's the approach I take. Am I right? Am I wrong? It's up to you to decide. I come from the Rav. We don't clone students. We try to inspire them and enable you to make your own intelligent decisions. Obviously, what I'm saying goes against Das Teira. Das Teira means absolutely right, infallible. To me, at times, Das Teira is in the wrong religion, and I don't want to elaborate. Kvod Hashem, Hasteir Davar. Okay. Then I showed you last week the Tzava of the Besamim Rosh, and it's a sad story where he declares, bury me far from anybody else, bury me in my clothes, bury me under a tree away from my friends. And you don't have to be a great psychologist. I don't have a doctorate in psychology. I took some classes in college, obviously. I have a grandson who's majoring in psychology today. But you don't have to be a great psychologist to understand that Reb Shaul Berlin knew he was different, thought differently, could not find his place in life. He was a genius, and this will come out, we'll see it weeks from now when evaluating him. He was a genius. But I had a discussion with Danny before. Danny played wolf on me and asked me some good questions about Rav Shaul Berlin. And I have to tell you that being a genius can be very troublesome. I've known geniuses in my life. And I'll put it very bluntly. If you've seen the documentary on the Rav, which I was privileged to engender, bring into the world, again, people bless me, people curse me when they see the documentary. But I'm not responsible for its contents. I found the producer and I got $1 million for it. It's the producer's take on the Rav, and I don't agree with everything, but then again, Abe Lebovitz, who knew the Rav intimately, said to me, that's my take too. So who am I to argue with Abe Lebovitz, as Eichet Tzadik Livracha? But I can put it very bluntly, in the documentary, the description of the Rav and the Rebbetzin is outstanding. And to put it into simple terminology, the Rav would have never become who he became without the Rebbetzin to ground him, if I can use that word, okay? And you can have many examples. I spoke in learning with Reb Chaim Zimmerman. When Reb Chaim Zimmerman died, I came into the kollel. I said, Sa gadol nofal b'Yisrael. The guys looked at me. What are you talking about, Rebbe? They never heard of him. But Reb Chaim was a genius, but he lo histadeh. Yes? Then I'm talking with him and learning in Heichel Shlomo Library. He's learning, not looking up at me. He's writing, learning, answering my questions all at the same time. So you have to understand that Rav Shobelman was a genius. At times when you're a genius, it is a problem to relate to the normal world. And I told the Danny when I learned in Lakewood. So, you know, I learned in Lakewood. It's not the Lakewood you know today. Nachum Lamb went to visit Lakewood. That Lakewood today has nothing in common with Lakewood I learned in. The Lakewood I learned in Eitan was still a carryover from Europe. You follow me? I saw the Alta Kletzky. You know what I'm talking about? The Baron Kutler was Rosh Yeshiva in Kletzk. And the Alta Kletzky who survived had come over, and Rebaran was their Rebbe, was their father, and of course everything was in Yiddish. So they used to point out to me, you know, some of these guys were geniuses. They used to point out to me, they used to say to me in Yiddish, and even Gil will pick it up, as a normala, normal. He's normal. Normala. You follow me in Yiddish, as a normala, he is normal. So I asked, what do you mean he's normal? What does that mean? And they explained to me. And I was a kid. You've got to remember, I'm learning in Lakewood. This is 53, 54. I was a kid. How old was I? 16, 17. And they explained to me that geniuses, many times, they're not normal. And if a genius is normal, this is a tremendous compliment. So you got to remember with Rav Shobelman what you're dealing with, because Danny asked me if he has so many radical opinions. Didn't he think people would object, people would yell, people would shout? And of course, the answer is sure. But that's the way a normal person will react. When I walk into class, I don't want to say anything too shocking because I don't want my students to fly out the window. A genius walks in, he couldn't care less. And that's from Show Berlin. Now, and I can tell you stories, you know, the stories about my classmate, the Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, what my students call the Grach, Hagon Reb Chaim, Dr. Grach, they call him. Students are very insightful. Chaim as a teacher was unbelievable. I can tell you the stories are true. He would give shir at Hebrew University, open to the public. It had nothing to do with Hebrew U, but that was the place that housed it, the venue. And he would give a shir. And one time in shir, there were 22 people sitting in the room. And he says, what did the Ramban say? And 18 guys, he tosses them out. He gets the fourth guy from the end. And the guy says, the Ramban says nothing on that topic. And he says, correct. And he goes on with the shir. And that's a legendary Reb Chaim story. But that's a genius, you understand? Normal people can't conduct classes like that. To a genius, it adds to his luster. Everyone would speak Reb Chaim. He gave shir, you should know, in YU, when the Reb was ill, he gave shir for a while and saved his Rayim. But what he required of the students, it couldn't go on, because he required not only all of Shas and Paiskim and every Rishon, but every type of volume ever written from his logical point of view about Zrayim. You had to come into class in order to understand Reb Chaim Shurim. You had to be a Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. You understand that? That's genius. So that's Reb Shaul Berlin. And we'll see Gedolei Achronim call him a genius of geniuses. Now, I want to raise another issue before I review what I began with last week and continue. I want to raise another issue which is very important. And I'll allude to people who have written on this issue. Tell me, do we have a right to read into Reb Shaul Berlin everything that we read into it? In other words, he claims this was the Rush, the Besamim Rush. And I'm going to come along, a little dummy from the, what century is this, the 21st century already, a product of the 20th century, Menachem. Remember, I grew up in the 20th century. I'm proud of it. And do I have a right to read into Rav Shaul Berlin that he's imitating Mendelssohn, he's interested in the Berlin Haskalah? I'm reading into it, and you saw what I did last week. I'm going to continue to do that for the next few months. Do I have a right? So you see, this is an interesting question. When you have a text in front of you, who raised this question? Do you remember that years ago, my student, Rabbi Dr. Mark Shapiro, had an article in Tradition where he raised the very question of what we read in, you learn Reb Chaim. All of you have been converted to Reb Chaim's Derech. Even the Eidot HaMizrach young men who were here, you also look into Reb Chaim. I can tell you already, 40, 30 years ago when I came in Aliyah, I was shocked to see that in the Sfadik yeshivas, they had Reb Chaim Chidush Rebbeinu Chaim, and I remember speaking and learning, and he understood Reb Chaim quite well. Tell me, you think in Morocco, in Tunisia, in Jerba, in the great centers in Turkey of Sfadik learning, they knew Reb Chaim? I mean, it was different worlds. But we read in, we learn, Reb Chaim reads into the Rambam. Please come in. Welcome. Reb Chaim reads into the Rambam, and he gives you chidushim. Was this really what the Rambam held, or is this Reb Chaim's fruitful mind?
He made a book out of
it? Which book are you referring to? No, he deals with it. Yeah, that article is in there, of course. I have studies in my mind, but not a book. It's part of a book. Yeah. He has more. So, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein raised the same problem in the Gush, in the talk he gave at the Gush. I mean, Reb Aaron raised it. He probably was bothered by students, because as I've said more than once, when you heard me on Shabbos, when I spoke here, I always quote the Gemara in Tainet, Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, that and the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah, you know, is magnificent. He says a little match can cause a big tree to go into flames. And the Talmud asks the Rebbe a question, and the Rebbe starts thinking, you get a fabulous shear out of it, a meridik sheyua. So Reb Aaron dealt with the same question, but Reb Aaron, Kedako Bekodesh, remember Reb Aaron's answer? And tell me, when you take a... Exactly. When you take a class in English literature and your professor reads into Shakespeare and how many books have been written of Gainus, of Shakespeare, what Shakespeare thinks and what Shakespeare is saying. So just as they do it with Shakespeare, we certainly have a right to do it with the Rambam. Now, you know who else discusses this problem? The Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg. And I gave a whole shiur in this in the Kollel years ago, but you can find it in the new edition of the Sri Deyesh that my dear Chavar Rav Avram Abba Weingott put out. Go to the index and look up Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and you'll find it where the Sri Deyesh discusses it. But you see, the Sri Deyesh, as I've lectured so many times, you have to understand that the Chiya Yaakov Weinberg was different than the Rav. Berlin affected him differently, and he became a scientific scholar. And nevertheless, within his personality, the Slabatka yeshiva boy and the scientific scholar were constantly living side by side. It's unlike the Rav. The Rav broadened in Berlin and became a world personality, but when it came to his yeshivish learning, he remained a brisker and only a brisker. There was no trace of the scientific approach in the Rav. Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg was very different, and that's why my student's doctorate on him is brilliant, brilliant doctorate. The last doctorate done under Professor Tversky at Harvard caused such controversy. You remember with Jewish Action with Diane Berkowitz, the Chrono Levracha, because when you view Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg, who are you viewing? The Slabatka yeshiva boy, or are you viewing the Berlin broadened scientific Torah scholar? And Rabbi Chiel Yaakov felt very strongly that Reb Chaim was not a perish on the Rambam. He felt that Reb Chaim Briska was his own chidushim using the Rambam as a starting point. You see, it's very different. And he went and told that to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. You know, Reb Yaakov visited with Reb Moshe in Warsaw, and he told him that your father is not an honest commentary on the Rambam. It's Kedushim that Reb Chaim wants to say using the Rambam as a starting point. So this is a very interesting question. And Lahavdil between Shakespeare and the Rambam, it's a question worth thinking about. When it comes to Reb Shaul Brolin, let me be intellectually honest, that we have a right to read into it absolutely. It's a mirror image of the period in which he lived. He is rebelling. He wants an outlet. He wants to breathe a different type of air. He wants out of the ghetto. When a man leaves a last will and testament, bury me far away from any other Jew, bury me under a tree, and bury me with the clothes I'm wearing when I die, it tells us something. But I will admit, maybe I'm reading too much into it, maybe I'm picking on too many tshuvot. I may be guilty of it. But the basic message is 100% correct. So that's what I want to say, just as a warning as we move on. Now, we dealt last week, first of all, we're going to come back to this, with the whole problem of shaving. And gentlemen, I have to tell you, we're getting involved with a problem here that we can think about and lecture on and debate ad infinitum. And it's a very simple question. Is there a Jewish civilization, or does Torah fit into every civilization? And what do I mean? Is this okay? I just knocked it around. Is it okay leaving it pointed towards me like this? Okay. Is there a Jewish civilization, or does Torah fit into each and every civilization? Now, what does it mean, is there a Jewish civilization? Yeah, and it's not just Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha. Is there a way to dress? A way a Jew has to look? If that's the case, everyone in this room is wearing Western dress. Maybe we're wrong. You see Balei Tshuva at the Kotel, there's a whole movement. They walk around in robes. They walk around like Avraham Avinu. They walk around with tzitzit on the robes, with chelet tzitzit. I've seen it time and again. You know, I'm a Kotel person. And Friday night at the Kotel, you have a lot of characters at the Kotel. It's an unbelievable experience. If you were there this past Friday night, I wouldn't say much. There were 20,000 people there. You saw the crowd coming, and we're walking out after Kabbalat Shabbat, after Maariv, and the Apikosim are first davening Mincha. The Vilna Gaon was correct. I looked at all these Hasidish guys davening Mincha. I'm already after the final Baruch Hu of Maariv. Oh my gosh, if the Vilna Gaon saw them, he would be hysterical. So, you see, if there is a Jewish civilization defined by the totality of Jewish experience, then no one in this room is a good Jew. We're all wearing westernized clothes. You know my story with the wedding, with Reb Shaul, well, going to this wedding. The wedding was a wedding one of a kind. It's the story of modern Israel. The boy was from Russia. The boy was orphaned. His mother was killed when the number 19 bus was blown up a block and a half from my house. My daughter was appointed by the courts a guardian of this boy and his sister. And this boy, what a ben Torah, in the Israeli army. He's marrying this girl. The father is of German origins, didn't know one word about Yiddishkeit, came in Aliyah to escape Hitler, wound up in Brazil first, then came in Aliyah, winds up a big Mapainik. He was the ambassador to one of the South American countries. He doesn't know one syllable of Yiddishkeit, but he married a very wonderful, attractive, beautiful, magnificent woman, related to every Moroccan Rebbe you can think of, all the Babas, the Baba Salim, the Baba Lez, and the Baba Baruch. And this girl is raised by this father and mother, goes to Bnei Akiva. What a girl, what a wedding. So I'm on my way to the wedding, and my wife is yelling at me, put on a white shirt, you're going to have a bracha. I was wearing a blue shirt like this, and my wife is yelling at me, all right, you want to make your wife happy? It's also I would say it's a very big chiyuv in the Torah to make your wife happy. It's shalom bayis, etc., etc. So I put on a blue shirt, a white shirt, thank you. Want to see if you're awake. I come, you remember what the Rebbe used to say? Mizait Machvar, if you're still awake. I come to the wedding, and who's Masada Kedushin? Rav Adenstein Zaltz. And I see my grandchildren sitting there looking at him with awe. It was worth to me $1 million to see my grandchildren sitting there looking at awe that they've seen Rav Adenstein Zaltz there. To make a bracha shechalak mechachmatoli reyav. And there's the Masada Kedushin with a bekesha and a blue shirt. So now, I have one simple question. Are we dressed like Jews, or are we dressed incorrectly? Now, this is a serious question. Said, I'm not here to criticize. I criticized Chassidim enough for one guy. Let the criticism be on their davening mincha according to Rabbeinu Tam, not according to Minhag Yisrael. Now, take it a drop further. What about a beard? And this is a very serious question. And as I've said so many times, when I see a chassid with payas, it doesn't bother me. No, hot payas. I also have payas. Believe me, my payas are good according to Rashi, not just according to the Rambam. You know, the Rambam you can have like this. This is Rashi, a little bit longer, the cheekbone. Baruch Hashem. Look, I see a chassid with payas around his ears. Doesn't move me. When I see a Yemenite with payas, I don't sleep at night. Because the Yemenites were basically less affected by the general civilization than any other portion of the Jewish people. And if they have payas, it means that the original Jews had payas. This is a serious question. What about a beard? What about a beard? I look at pictures of my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents, all of them with long beards and black clothes, Hasidic Yidden, Pelish Yidden. No. I look at myself in the mirror. All I see is an image of Obama, of Bill Clinton, of Derek Jeter, name some other famous people of the world today. I don't look like a Jew. What's up? Come on. And this is a serious question. Now, I have to tell you, halacha lemaisa, that I believe with all my heart that there is no concept as a Jewish civilization in the sense there's a way to dress, a way to live, a way to drive a car. We're part of humanity, and this is coming back to my Divrei Torah in the Monday class in the name of my Rebbe, Geva Tosha Benachi Amachem. All of us are both strangers in the world because we're Jews. We're different. We observe Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha. We are ashamed of what's going on in Israel today with the police department, that the upper echelon of the police, one is a bigger maneuver than the other. You follow me now? You're following the news? You don't know. Baruch Hashem, you'll live out to be 240 if you don't follow the news. Today, Baruch Hashem, I predicted on Shabbos that Balei would have to step down, and thank God. But it's not just Balei. He's a maneuver. Frankel's a maneuver. The woman involved is a maneuver. This one she slept with. Let me not dirty my mouth. It's terrible, and this is what you hear on the news and every newspaper. No, we should not be like that. We are Jews. We are Gerim. We are not Bill Clintons, period. We are not JFKs in the White House. We're different. On the other hand, we're human beings. Ger v'toshav, toshav, we're part of the human race. And a lot of tshuvot have been written. I have to tell you a few. Yaakov wrote about it, my Rebbe, when I learned the Sanhedrin. We discussed this in great detail. That if it's a universal way to dress, there is no prohibition. If this is the way modern people dress, a Jew can dress that way too. With having a beard, having payas, you can make a very strong case that it appears in the Mishnah, it appears in the Gemara, that Jews shaved since time immemorial. You see that the Mishnah is so concerned if you didn't shave Erev Yontif, if you're allowed to shave in Chol HaMoed. We see the sugya, what if you get out of jail, etc., etc. Avela, you're not allowed to shave, but what does that show you? When we're living a normal life and not in Avela, we do shave. So you see that shaving is part of the human being. We have to shave in a proper way. Yes, yes, Gili.
What about the story in Tanakh when David sent soldiers to the king of Moab and they shaved off half their beards and they wouldn't go back? They were ashamed.
So you see, evidently, I don't have to go further than that story. And if you were Gera Chassid and they shaved off half your beard, you would hide in your house until your whole beard grew back. You understand? That's the way people lived at that time. But you see from the Mishnah, there were times when people shaved. Listen, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to tell you that my great-grandparents didn't shave. You understand? And I'm not going to tell you there was a tremendous shayla when the Jews came out of the ghetto. Can they shave? Can't they shave? But evidently, the healthy instincts of Klal Yisrael, this comes back to my Monday class, Im lo neviim heim b'nei neviim, the Gemara in Pesachim daf samach vav. Fuch hazim may amad davar, go and see what the people do, the Gemara in Brachot, daf mem dalet amed bet mem hei omer aleph, the sugya continues. You see, the healthy instincts of the Jewish people felt that to have a beard may be wonderful, may be good, may be holy, may be sacred, may be more pious, but you can be a good Jew without a beard too. And this is the way the world lives today, our world lives. Of course, we shave in a way that's permissible. But nevertheless, when they came out of the ghetto, this was a head-on conflict. In the ghetto, Jews had beards. Out of the ghetto, it was considered a sign of sophistication, a sign of modernity, a sign of an intelligent, modern individual that you have to be clean-shaven. And that's the tshuva I quoted last week from the Besamim Rosh, tshuva Yudchet, where the Besamim Rosh talks about the man with a sore on his face. Is he allowed to shave? Isn't he allowed to shave? And you see his whole attitude becomes lenient. That maybe if a guy, and there's talking with a razor, it's not talking shaving with an electric shaver, it's not talking shaving with powder, but he goes into, I quoted the Gemara to you, Hamakif, Vahanikav, that if the Jew holds his face still, and it's only the Gentile who's using the razor, perhaps in a case like this, where the man has sores on his face, he'd be allowed to shave in that fashion. And this is one of his shubat on shaving. The other one becomes more problematic. But everyone attacks him for his lenient attitude. But what do you see here? A reflection of modernity and Rav Shaul Berlin. And I can tell you, 200 years later, or less than 200 years, 1957, I can tell you, Eidut Ne'emana, that Professor Yitzchak Zimmer, I think he goes in Hebrew with the name Zimmer, Zion Memresh, but the original name is Zimmer, Z-I-M-M-E-R, Eric Zimmer, little older than I am, classmate of the late Rabbi Dr. Aaron Bat. These people were saintly, big lamdanim. Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Zimmer, if you don't recognize the name, make believe you do, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Run on to write many volumes on his specialty was Ashkenazic Jewry at the middle of the Rishonic period, professor at Bar Ilan University. So there's Eric in class. It's right before the big Pesach break. And the Rav finishes shiur, and I think I've told you many times over the decades, the Rav would finish shiur, lean back, 80% of the class would run out. But the hard hitters would move up, sit around Rebbe, and we'd throw questions at him until he stood up, and then we'd all stand up with him and walk him across the street to his mother's apartment, Rebbetzin Pesha, Zichrona Livracha. So Eric says to Rebbe, and I'm an ear witness, Rebbe, can I shave on Chol HaMoed? And the Rav looks at him, what kind of question is that? You'll shave Erev Yontif? Of course, Rebbe, I shave every day. Once you will shave Erev Yontif, you can shave on Chol HaMoed. What, you want to walk around like a slob? And then the Rav says to him, what are you doing on Chol HaMoed? He says, well, I want to go out, you know, I have some dates lined up with girls. You certainly have to shave. You have to be presentable. And that's what the Rav answered. So the Rav halachically, of course, was correct with all the lamdas, Rav Moshe's Chivat, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. We shave every day today. The whole problem of not shaving Chol HaMoed, Shem Yikanes L'Yontif Menuvo, once we shave every day and shave every Yontif, we'll come to this, the Noda B'Yehuda. But look how far we've come in the modern world. So you see, you can criticize Rav Shaul Berlin. On the other hand, he was stepping into modernity. And modernity, part of modernity, men shaving. And we have accepted it. This has become part of the modern outlook. I don't think there's a posek in the world today who would say you're a bad Jew if you don't have a beard. They would probably say you might be a better Jew if you have a beard. All right, obviously Rakefet will contest that, but Rakefet may very well be wrong at this point. You follow me, Menachem? But at least you see here, we're not reading that much into Rav Shaul Berlin. This is really conflict. Now, then you go one step further, and we were talking about this last week, and this is overwhelming. And here you have to understand, and wow, did this become major when the Jews came out of the ghetto and reformed conservative Judaism. Gentlemen, just think for one moment. You come out of the ghetto, you see a church. I grew up in a neighborhood that was one-third Jewish, one-third Irish, one-third Italian. Either you went to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, younger kids went Shabbos, everyone else worked on Shabbos, and you went to church on Sunday morning. You know how long the church service took? 1 hour. That was the whole church service. You go, we had one Protestant, little Protestant church on my block, a German Protestant church, very nice pastor. I write about him in my new book that I signed a contract a week ago in front of you, if you recall. I write about him and what would happen with the yeshiva boys and this pastor. It's a very nice story and a true story, but leave that for the book. So, an hour, you look at Jews, we start davening, come on, America today, you start davening 8:30. You're lucky if you walk out of the synagogue 3 hours later. In Israel, all right, it's a little bit different, I have to be honest. Here we don't have a Sunday, we just have a Shabbat. Although we do have our Friday today, which is a big improvement, but Friday is Erev Shabbat, it's not like a Sunday. It's not a day you can go travel and not look at the watch. I have a rule on Friday, I don't travel. My biggest travel on Friday is from my house to Gruss, and from Gruss back to my neighborhood, go to my mother, get back into the car, back home. By 10 o'clock Friday morning, I am at home. And I'm an Erev Shabbos Jew. You know what that means, Danny? Bamir Yefilzich, the Kedushat Shabbos, already 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can feel the Kedushat. My Rebbe used to speak. Rebbe used to say, we have Shemesh Shabbos Jews in America. We don't have Erev Shabbos Jews. I don't like Jews who fall in at the last minute or fall into the kotel at the last minute. But we need a Sunday. Fine. So here it's a little bit better. But the Jew comes out of the ghetto. What is going on with all the davening a Jew does? That's not modern. That's not up to date. Not only that, who understands Hebrew? You go into the church, the Protestant church, everything is in German. Everything is in the vernacular. Everything is in English in America. Even the Catholic Church, I told you, has changed the language of the Mass that you're allowed to use the vernacular. They're Reformed Catholics today. You don't have real Catholics. The present Pope tried to change the clock back, but did not succeed. So, and then you have, you know, all these brachot, birchat hashachar. Wow, look what you say. So this tshuva, yudchet, is very fascinating. And imagine he talks that this is the rush getting a question like this. In the rush's time, such questions did not exist. But when the Jew comes out of the ghetto, suddenly, what do we have to say all the brachot for? Who knows all these brachot? Who can say all these brachot? Who understands Lashon HaKodesh? Why do we daven the way we daven? And you see the Besamim Rosh's attitude, very parava. You've heard that expression? In Yiddish hat man gesagt, Vasadik. Vasadik. Gilly. To translate that for you and Yossi is a problem. Reb Heschel Schechter, your Rebbe, uses it in one of his volumes. I think it's a Nefesh HaRab. He uses the word Vasadik. And people criticize them, either write Hebrew or write Yiddish, but don't write, well, we don't understand one word. So a friend of mine, Professor Samuel Dershowitz, Sam Dershowitz, professor, doctor, genius, a Dershowitz, you understand, my neighbor. So he writes to Reb Heschel, and Reb Heschel writes back to him, when you write your book about the Rav, write the way you want. This is the way I write it. There's a special hit him over the head. You know, he wrote about 10 corrections with use Hebrew. Vasadik, Vasadik. Watery. Understand the expression? It's like your wife is going to make you a cup of coffee and Gil is going to, don't get upset. Over. I once saw an Adam Gadol. I can't believe what I saw in Lakewood. That this, it was my Rebbe and his Erev Rosh Hashanah in his house, and his wife brings him a cup of coffee. It's not hot enough. And he gets upset. Wow. Make your own cup of coffee. Don't say a word. When your wife makes a cup of coffee, it's not strong enough for you, so don't say to her, it's vasadik. It is. Get up and make your own cup. Got it? Coffee is very individual. Everyone has a certain taste. As David Pardo will tell you, it took him 6 months now to master the way his wonderful wife loves a cup of coffee. Am I right or wrong? Have you?
It's pretty quick, actually. She hates
it. She hates it. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Don't confuse me with the facts. Now, but what's amazing is power of attitude. You know, that the brachot, maybe we don't have to say them, and he attributes it to a ravid, which I couldn't find. I looked into the ravid. I went through the Mishnah Torah, that the ravid says you shouldn't say it with Shem V'malchut, all these brachot and not in Chazal. But in Menachot you do have Shelo Asani Isha, Shelo Asani Goy, Shelo Asani Yevid, the brachot, because we have more mitzvot. A male makes a brachot. He has more mitzvot than a non-Jew, more mitzvot than an Evid Kanani, and more mitzvot than a woman. So he thanks God, you gave me more mitzvot. Of course, the feminists have gone crazy with that Gemara, but if I give you a different shot that no one in the world can contest, and this already was said by Reb Moshe Samuel in London in 1840, the translator of Mendelssohn into English, you can imagine, Shai, that already then the feminists were yelling, Shelo Asani Isha. So he said very shy, and I said it on my own. Then when I found it, this is 40 years ago, I found this pshat, I went up to heaven, I was so happy. He says very simply, if a man would have to have what a woman goes through in childbirth and child rearing, there'd be no children in the world. Shelo Asani Isha, thank God I don't have the responsibility of the feminine personality, the feminine mystique. And I tell you, you can't argue with that. You follow me, sir? I don't want to scare you, but Chaga, he aim kol chai. You understand? So it's not a bad pshat, but the basic pshat simply means you thank God you have more mitzvot. There you have the sefer chinuch. Why does a man need more mitzvot? Because a man by nature is an animal. He's a beast. Look what's going on with the police department. You understand? If you read in Kenzik Brechen, you can look at the scandal in Michalad that the Yediot, five tremendous pages a few weeks ago, right or wrong. So a man is a beast. Shelo Asani Isha, he needs more mitzvah to tame him. Sefer Chinuch, you find that it's not bad. Let me tell you, it's not bad at all, because I taught over the years, I taught men now for 52 years, but I did teach out of the 52, 31 years I taught women, and I'm a little bit an expert. I have only daughters, Baruch Hashem, and God has a good sense of humor. It took 13 straight grandchildren until I saw a granddaughter from only daughters. So God has a good sense of humor. But I know the feminine personality well, and believe me, I can tell it to you in one simple anecdote. When I gave a Musa talk in BMT, the guys walked out laughing. When I gave the same talk in Machon Gold to their girlfriends, the girls walked out crying. And that's the difference why we say Shelo Asana Yisha, and that a man needs a Brit Mila and needs additional mitzvah. Now, let me go further. So now you start to see, Danny, that I have a right to read in to the Besamim Rosh, into Reb Shaul Berlin. You follow me, Shai? Because believe me, the Rosh didn't have these problems. But when you come out of the ghetto, these problems are real. And you got to remember, Reform Judaism began. Remember my lectures on Reform Judaism, and then the Monday class began with an halachic context. And they said, we have to shorten this, we have to shorten that, you know, and then why you have so much prayer, and b'chol lashon, aren't you yotzei kriyshma in any language, b'chol lashon shata shomea? So why do we have to daven what we don't know? And these were real problems. Fine. What's amazing is, he gets involved in his super commentary, the Kasa da Hasana, which of course is Reb Shaul Berlin. This already is not something he found. This is his addition. And here he gets involved that maybe we don't have to pray at all. You all know the sugya in Bracha, that a person who's busy, involved with the mitzvah, osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. The sugya in that sugya is actually in sukkah. It's with dealing with who's patur from a sukkah. There's a whole sugya in Masechet Sukkah. In Bracha, you have the whole question of a person up on a tree, right, working. Does he have to come down to say Kriyat Shema? Can he just say the first part on the tree? He can't concentrate that well on the tree. What his obligations are. And he doesn't realize what he's saying here. You actually have a Chatam Sofer who is printed from manuscript, his Chidushim HaMesechet Ketuvah, on the sugya of the sukkah, the Chatan Vakala, the Avel. It's a whole sugya in Masechet Sukkah. I believe it's Mendalid in that area. A whole sugya, big sugya, basic sugya on that topic. No? You're familiar with the Chatam Sofer? In the state of Israel, you never have to daven, because everything we do is a mitzvah. We're building the country. Mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Chatam Sofer raises the issue quite seriously, not tongue in cheek. I first was exposed to this as a kid of 14. Why? Bnei Akiva. And we had something, we had a meet in the Israeli consul in New York. And that was a big moment. We had delegates. We're meeting with the consul to New York. It's not the ambassador. The ambassador is in Washington. But I don't have to tell you that the Israeli consul in New York is second in importance to the embassy in Washington. And we want to make a million for Mincha. And there's a guy wandering around there, one of the aides of the consul in Israeli. So we ask him to join us for Mincha. He says, no, I don't have to daven. Osek b'mitzvah, and he quotes this concept to us. He had, in his youth, he had learned. Then he put on a yarmulke and he joined us. He was pulling our leg. But the Chatam Sofer raises the issue seriously. And Eino Chinami, when you're a lawyer in America, you're not doing a mitzvah. When you're a doctor in America, it's not the same mitzvah. Let's put it that way. When you're a dentist in America, when you're a banker in America, but here in Israel, no matter what you're doing, you're building the land, you're building the economy. Mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz, Osek b'mitzvah, Pato min ha-mitzvah. So you see, in his super commentary, he wants to show, you know, that maybe we don't have to daven that much. Parnasa is a mitzvah. Supporting yourself. Some Rishonim learn that this is not just a Rishut. This is a Chiyuv. Isn't this the whole machloket in the Gemara in Masechet Bracha, Daf Lamed Hei, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael? Do you have a right to stop learning, to work? And the Gemara asked, this Gemara was widely quoted by Rabbi Avadya a few weeks ago. And according to the Gemara, if you say you can't stop learning, so how will you have any work? How will you have any production? How will you have buildings? How will you have food, drink? How will you have doctors, dentists? And the Gemara says, Zachu nashtam alachtan al yedei acherim, meaning the Goyim will do it for us. And of course, the Gemara says, many followed that viewpoint, and many followed the viewpoint of Torum Derech Eretz, and which viewpoint succeeded? The viewpoint of Torah in Derech Eretz. It's an open Gemara. So, you see, a person has to have Derech Eretz, a person has to work, a person has to live a normal life. If that's the case, maybe we're so busy that we can't do all this davening. And he says, so therefore we can be a little bit more lenient about davening, not to daven so much and so long. Cut it down a little. Modernity. You fellas who are going into the rabbinate in America, in Israel is a different story, but in America you're going to hear Balabatim, we're going to say to you, davening is too long, what can we do? People are talking, and of course people are talking. Who can sit for 3.5 hours and not talk? And these are real problems. And I want to tell you, in the rabbinate, I had all types of grandiose schemes to make the service quicker. Some of it succeeded, some of it you'll never succeed. I told you, I abolished all Mishaberach, just at the end of the Kriya, a Mishaberach Klali. No, one time a guy came up, let me not mention his name, a wealthy guy demanded a Mishaberach, he's making a Mishanada, he's going back to what he knew all his life. So I told the Gabbai, go ahead, all the rules are not ironclad. You have to have a little bit seichel, you don't turn down. At that time, a guy giving a Chvei $72 at a Mishaberach in the early 60s, you don't make a fight over it because the rabbi wanted to curtail the time for Kriyat HaTorah. But these are real problems that you will face. And he says, we have to accommodate the people. Not so terrible if they don't say the bracha properly, if they skip a little bit, etc., etc. Now, there's something else here that is extremely fascinating. And I'm paraphrasing what he says. He says, when it comes to learning, there's another reason why we have to daven today, because we do not have to learn that much. We're not medaktek in learning. And what is he referring to? And here you come to the heart of Choshen Mishpat. He's referring to the fact that we rarely paskin according to the strict halacha. What we do in life is bishara. And pshara is mainly common sense. Now, what he's touching upon goes back to the sugya in Sanhedrin, Dafava, Medved, Dafzayin, Amad Aleph. I believe I've spoken about this over the decades. Certainly when we dealt with Din of the Malchut, the dinner in class, I dealt with this in detail. When we sit in on a Din Torah, Minig Yisrael today is, and you'll see this in the Choshen Mishpat as well, we will always tell the litigants, do you want strict halacha or do you want a pshara, a compromise? Why is a compromise better? Because a compromise, and it's based upon the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when you have strict halacha, one person wins, one person loses. When you have a compromise, nobody wins and nobody loses. At least they will walk out talking to each other. And that's the famous story they tell about many Gedolei Israel, but I heard it about the Beit HaLevi. that the Rav often told the story how the Beit HaLevi, a butcher came in with a shiler and a cow, treifot, and the Beit HaLevi looks, and there was a needle in the cow's stomach, and the Beit HaLevi declares the cow treif. And the butcher has lost, let's put it into modern money, $500. He walks out, doesn't say a word, thanks the Rav for his psak. A day later, there's litigation over $500, and the Beit HaLevi gives a psak, and the two people are cursing each other and maledicting the Rav. The one who lost walks out, cursing the world, maledicting the Rav. So the Beit HaLevi's Talmidim asked the Rebbe, we don't understand. Yesterday, your butcher lost $500, and he walked out and thanked you for giving a psak. Today you were dealing with a total of $500. You ruled the 400 this way, 100 this way. And the man walks out with such maledictions on his lips. And let me tell you, what you don't know is Yiddish is the richest language to curse in. The curses are unbelievable. You should live to marry off your daughter and drop dead under the chuppah. You understand? That's a minor curse. In Yiddish, they're a lot worse. So the man, so the Beit HaLevi answered, of course, that when I paskin, by paskin treif kasha. But when I said you owe him 400 and he only loses 100, I was declaring him to be an ingrate. I was declaring him to be a bad person. I was declaring him to be a cheater, and that he won't forgive. So we always ask people. I sat in Dinei Torah with Rav Pinchas Teitz of Elizabeth. He was my mentor in the rabbinate. He used to scare, pardon the words, the hell out of the litigants. And if you knew Rabbi Teitz, you know, this is not Rakefet sitting with a blue shirt. This is Rabbi Teitz with a tie and a white shirt and a jacket. And, you know, the Aruch HaShulchan says when you're sitting at the Torah, you have to wear a hat, and you have to have the Shekhinah is present, etc. Do you want the strict letter of the law, which can be devastating? Or do you want the wise rabbi sitting here to come up with an amicable compromise? Every last person asks for a compromise. Okay? So he says, I mean, this is ingenious. He says, today we do pshara all the time. So we don't have to know every little dot in Shulchan Aruch. We don't have an excuse not to daven. Now, you know what's amazing about that paragraph? Tell me, what has become an entire profession today? Who here is a lawyer? Aren't they trying to bypass legal cases? Don't you have an entire concept of a new profession? Arbitration. They call it in Hebrew. The word in Hebrew is a new Hebrew word. Anyone know? Gishur. Gishur. It's Gesha. It's a new word that the Vat HaLashon came up with. Arbitration. Gishur. You see advertisements today. You have a business dispute. Arbitrate. You'll save money in the long run. Divorce. And I don't want to cost my daughter any clients, but I wish my daughter would go out of business on that level. Take my word for it. I'd be the happiest person alive. She should just dedicate herself to real estate. Her partner is the real estate person, and my daughter is, of course, family practice. Divorce. Do you have any idea what goes on? Do you have any idea? And if you get a lawyer or a toein, who is interested in making a living, you have one session, it drags on, everything fine, come right now. Every time you're in court, you have to pay. You have to pay the lawyer, you have to pay. You can, a client who represents himself has a fool for a client, you've all heard that. You have to have, okay? And I have seen cases, I have students, I've seen years of litigation, had they only settled on a compromise. And of course, there's always one party willing to compromise, but the other party, the lawyer is convinced them you're going to get millions. So it's amazing what he says here, that the insight is not just modern,
it's contemporary.
It's the world in which we live today. And I just saw in the weekend papers, the on Shabbos, I look at the Haredi press, the Tzioni Dati press, I saw advertisements for courses in Gishua. Particularly, they're dealing with family problems. But I know with business too. And by the way, I want to tell you something. The Eda Haredi Beitin has a fabulous reputation among people for monetary issues. They go to their Beit Din and they sign right away that they're going to accept the Peshara, and the Dayanim of the Eda Haredim didn't among it have a sterling reputation. It's very fascinating with all the outer machlokes that goes on and controversy. On that level, they are accepted 100% even by people who do not wear kippah. That's what's amazing. But they'll come into the bank, they'll put on a kippah, but they know they will get justice. Arabs have a lawsuit with a Jewish partner, a business deal. They'll wind up in the Eda Haredit Beit Din. It's very fascinating. So what he says here, he says, all right, today we can't say we're learning around the clock. You know, the Gemara talks about Ben Azai. We have to get up to daven. But the most amazing part is, and he comes up with names. I mean, you see, this is the Shamati, go and argue with him. The Shamati, Shehachasid Mari Kitsinken. Who is Mari Kitsinken? Moreno Harav Reb Yehuda, Reb Yisrael Kitsinken. Nowhere. Name. Ra'ubo Kama Pamim. Shahayan Yose Vadome Bein Mitok Sifro Fi Ainu Omeid Fi Over Zman Tfila. Wow. He's sitting, he's learning. Doesn't get up to daven. Zman Tfila goes by. Watch this. Unbelievable. Amnon miksa talmida ramluli shed batku acharav b'chol pam shaya osekhen haya lo made bi sifrei sodot ha-Torah v'himkein ha-dava huinyin acher da osek b'maiser mekava eino posek. What a description. The students looked, what was the Rebbe learning? He was learning Kabbalah. And Kabbalah don't interrupt to daven. Now, this is an unbelievable description. What is it telling us? First of all, it may tell us very well that philosophy, learning, Kabbalah, more important than anything else. More important than davening. Also, look what it tells you. That what is Kabbalah? What is Maaseh Merkava? You're coming out of the ghetto. All the philosophic questions are shot at you. Who are you? Why are you a Jew? What's your relationship with God? What's God's relationship with the world? All the questions that the Catholic Church had to face with the Reformation, the Renaissance. Go to a museum. Look at the pictures that were painted before 1400, 1500. Everything is about God. Everything is about their belief. The pictures are outer-worldly. Saintliness. Look at the pictures painted after the Renaissance. Everything is about the human being. Even the religious pictures. Don't want to use the names of who we're talking about. But they look very different. Very modern. Very up to date. Very sensuous. No longer the emasculated saints of yesteryear. Didn't the world change? Wouldn't you thought in world history, until the Renaissance, the world evolved around God? With the Renaissance and the gradual process it unearths, the world evolves around man. Look where we're at today. Look what came out of it. Communism. Nazism. Just think for a minute. What happened to this world that was once godly? Look what we just spoke about a few minutes ago. The highest echelon of the Israeli police.
Wasn't so godly before the Renaissance.
Excuse me?
Wasn't so godly before the Renaissance.
No, but the classic medieval church was a lot more godly than what happens afterwards. We're talking to the world in general. I'm not talking about the priests, individuals, or popes, or the way they lived. But the whole message, the whole lifestyle, wow, has everything changed. And these challenges, you got to remember Mendelssohn, Jerusalem, his philosophic book, the overtones. Are we a religion of creed or deed? Whoever asked these questions before? This is all a reflection of coming out of the ghetto. Who knows if this story with the Kabbalah is not a reflection of coming out of the ghetto. But it's unbelievable what this man puts in. And you know, you read it, you study it, you take it for granted. Who is this individual? And it seems to be it was all a figment of his imagination. Okay, let me move further. Yeah, Malcolm?
He said this to Russia, it's not, so how can you tell something else? He said he saw this guy not getting up for his pedagogy.
Yeah.
Or so, if he quotes the writers for that matter.
Right, so you see, of course. So, but nevertheless, Rav Reuben Omar defends him. We'll see, relax. You'll see, wait, I have material to show you at the very end. But wait. We have to see the tshuva inside. Now, this tshuva is unbelievable. It's written to his son. The tshuva is signed Avicha Asher Baharav Yechiel. It's written to, it could be Rabbi Yaakov Baal HaTurim, writing to his son. He doesn't say, it just begins by saying, I don't like to get involved in these matters, but since you're asking me, my son, well, I'm going to explain it. And he signs it, Avicha Asher Ben Harav Reb Yechiel. It's the Rush. He signs it the Rush. Unbelievable. But what was the Shayla here? Again, it's a reflection of modernity coming out of the ghetto. It's the whole question of what language we use in prayer. And here the question comes up that a certain individual, Rav Dunn, doesn't give us any other information, had the parshat of his tefillin written in Aramaic. Now, you all know this is a Sugyan Shas, also Sanhedrin. You'll find it in Halacha. Can you write tefillin, mezuzah? Can you write svarim in a language other than Ashurit, than our Hebrew? What was the original language? And we find that some of our svarim, I don't have to tell you, Ezra, Nehemiah, Daniel, parts of them are in Aramaic. Excuse me? An Aramaic, yeah, that's what he's quoting here. He's quoting, and then there's an opinion in Chazal, you can write it in the Syrian language. So here a person comes along and writes tefillin in Aramaic. All right, what does this show? You see, Aramaic is a euphemism for the vernacular. That's the language the people spoke. Why don't we use German or English or French, depending upon what our vernacular is in our prayers, in our tefillin? It's unbelievable that he puts this question in the words of the Rush. And the Rush says, It's true. There are opinions in the Gemara. There are opinions that one can write Svarim, Tefillin, Mezuzot in a language other than Hebrew, but Minhag Yisrael is not like that. And we have to go out of our way to write it in Hebrew as Jews have done. And I would take this Reb Dun who went, and I would, he uses very strong language, in Chel Hamud, he should be whipped, and he has to write Tefillin, Mezuzot, and Sifrei Torah in Ashirit, because this is Minhag Yisrael. Fine. We would all agree with that. Minhag Yisrael is extremely important. Minhag Yisrael determines halacha. When there's a homach like it, we have to follow what the minhag is, what the practice is, of course. But then he gets involved in the question of two pairs of tefillin. Now, look when this was written. 1780s? 1790s? If it was written by Rav Schoberlin, which we believe it was written by, what issue was on the forefront of the world? Tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam? Wasn't this the issue, among others, that the Hasidim raised? Didn't the Shulchan Aruch paskin lahalacha, and every last one of you knows that you've studied Mishnah Brura, that although there's a machloket Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam on the Seder HaPashiot, it's a big sugya, like in Menachot. I'll show you in a few minutes how Art Scroll, I wanted to see the way they deal with a sugya like this. It's quite impressive. But machloket Seder HaPashiot. Do we follow the order of the Torah or the Vahaya? In the middle, how do you put in the four parshiyot? What is the Shulchan Aruch paskin? We follow Rashi. And only someone renowned for his piety, his chassidus, his tzidkut, puts on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin as well. Along came the chassidim, and every Tom, Dick and Harry, every kid who turns 12, gets two pairs of tefillin. Wow, and the Mekubalim, what they read into the tefillin, are some of you familiar? Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi. The Vilna Gaon put on how many pairs of tefillin? One. And you remember the Vilna Gaon's famous statement that if we're going to be Chayshish, v'shitat rishonim, he figured out, what was it, the 23, 24, different pairs of tefillin. And what about Rabbeinu Eliyahu, where you have to make the knot every day? Can you imagine all of us would have to learn how to make a knot on the Shul Rosh every day? Kshatim liot on dech, v'letotafot ben yanecha, kshatim every day. Who ever heard of such a thing? And this became a cause celebre. The Chassidim were coming along and changing literally one of the most important basic mitzvot that a man has. There's we start our day with putting on tefillin. Tefillin is crucial. Tefillin is so important. And here they came along and changed what was Minhag Yisrael from time immemorial. And World War III broke out over Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. All of you are aware of it. All of you have lived with it. And all of you suffer with it one way or another. I'm a Litvak, I suffer when I see these young schmecks, kids of 13, with two pairs of tefillin. Boy, I want to go and smack them and grab the tefillin away, and I have to say, what are you, an idiot? The battle is over. The Hasidim have won. You're lucky they don't put a second pair on you. Be satisfied with that reality. And I told you, when it came to Russia, remember what I told you? Thank God for the Hasidim. Because everyone going in was told in advance, you take him two pairs of tefillin. When the lady in charge of religious objects of the KGB will ask you at the airport, what is this for? Personal usage. we put on two different pairs. We're good Chabadnikim. Chabadnikim paved the way, and one pair we left, and one pair we took out. The good Jew has to put on tefillin. Although I know people who gave away both pairs and missed a day or two of putting on tefillin. They just, their hearts were breaking with what they saw. And when you read my new book, you'll understand it a lot better, because you guys are in the computer age when you don't know what went on in the 70s and the 80s. And oh my gosh, it's like ancient history. Yosef Kisrael thinks I'm talking about Matan Torah. I'm talking about Aaron Rakefet, messenger of the Mossad, in charge of the study of Talmud in the Refusnik community, 1980 to 1989. Got it? Not ancient history, but of course in the computer age, that is ancient history. Mendel, he deals with the whole question and attacks Rabbeinu Tam. His words are very fascinating. He attacks Rabbeinu Tam. How could Rabbeinu Tam come along and give a new order of tefillin? And how can you upset the apple cart, and how can you upset tradition? And he attacks Rabbeinu Tam. And he says, but if Rabbeinu Tam did it, there had to be a tradition before him in the Goyim. It's not anything Rabbeinu Tam discovered. It had to be long before. No, gentlemen, is he clairvoyant here? What happened afterwards? 200 years later, they discovered tefillin. Remember the Qumran caves and the Dead Sea? Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. So he didn't realize how insightful he was here. But he says something amazing. And again, I want to read it to you. Shekol zenatan layad liapikarsim lomer Eicha mitzvot mafuk fakat biyadam v'yomrim shemisorah hi mi sinai. Those words are dynamite. He says, by a machloikis like this, on the Seder Pasher of Tefillin, you have put a sword into the hands of the apikarsim. My dear students, do you realize what he's saying? What is the basis of our existence? How many of you are going to dialogue or debate one day with reforming conservative rabbis? Those of you that are going to the great Gola will have students in America and Canada and South Africa. And Great Britain, we all have graduates of the Kollel in these four areas, besides Israel. I don't know if we have anyone in Australia. I recommended, I got someone a position in Australia, but he was not my Talmud from the Kollel. Rabbi Sprung, he's in a very big position today in Melbourne. I know him. No, you're going to debate, you're going to dialogue. And what's going to be your critical stance where you are different? You're going to say tradition. We have a Mesorah. Our Platon Sofrehim. You're going to say over Torah that you heard from Aaron Rakefet in the name of his Rebbe. Most important Torah of all. Our Platon Sofrehim, the remnant. What does the remnant mean? The tradition of yesteryear, the connection to yesteryear, the link to yesteryear. We're talking to Reb Heschel. You know that we go back a very long way. Remember Rabbi Schechter, the day he came to the Bronx. So my brother was his chavruta, my younger brother. He's 2 years younger than I am. So I was telling him, he asked me, my brother can't operate anymore. You turn 70, can't operate. He can, you know, deal with medicine. He teaches in medical schools here, but he can't operate. He used to be in Asuta, private hospital, but can't operate. So I said to Reb Heschel, imagine if they wouldn't let us, you turn 70, Rakefet, out. You can't teach. Rabbi Schechter, you can't teach. You're over 70. We both agreed, and our lives would end. If I didn't have students, we'd finish it. So I said to Reb Heschel, you see, Heshi, we're more valuable as we grow older because we're a link to yesteryear. Pleitat sofreihem. We loved it. We hit the nail on the head. Both understood each other. No, you're coming along and saying the tefillin that everyone put on until now, throw it out. Rabbeinu Tam. Nothing else counts. Terrible to have this machloket. And that's what he says. Sounds good. But you see what he may be doing here? And maybe I'm reading into it. Do you see what he may be doing here? He's raising the whole question of tradition. At times can be faulty. The tradition is wrong. And with that sentence, those words, and he has a whole concept that he develops as a result. Doesn't that bring you to Lower Merion Synagogue, 1961? A young rabbi, fresh out of the yeshiva, younger than anyone here. You guys are the luckiest guys in the world. You sit and learn, supported by the yeshiva, till you're walking with a cane, and then they tell you go into the rabbinate. 23 years of age, a young rabbi named Aaron Rothkopf, first fella. And there he is, I see him with my own eyes, in debate with Reb Moshe, with Professor Moshe Greenberg. And Moshe says to Aaron Rothkopf, I heard it with my own ears, he says, you are not Yotzei Tefillin. I am. I only put on Rabbeinu Tam. And at that time, they had just found, I think it was the Dead Sea Tefillin, they had not yet found the Plankton Cave. And it was opened and it was Rabbeinu Tam. And Professor Greenberg went out and bought a Hasidic pair of Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, and those are the Tefillin he puts on. Period. And a young Aaron Rothkopf, I have to argue with him. I didn't know what to say. I was lost. All right, I didn't do too badly. Excuse me? I'm telling you what Moshe Greenberg said to me in front of Kahal V'Eida, and I'm a young rabbi, 23, and we didn't have classes like this. Remember, we were not prepared for the real rabbinate. I knew how to learn. I knew Reb Chaim. I knew, you know, I was a Talmud of the Rav. I was a Talmud of Reb Lezer Volk, Telsha. I was a Talmud of Reb Neich Bornstein, Abriska, Mira. I knew, believe me, I knew Mira, I knew Brisk, I knew Telsh, I knew Slabotka, I knew Berlin, but beyond that, I knew nothing. Say that it's a different world today. You fellas are lucky. I was born before my time. But you see, once you start playing with tradition, everything falls by the wayside. What are you davening Musaf on Shabbos for? What are you davening Musaf on Yontif? Isn't there a viewpoint that Musaf was only davened by the Shliach Tzibur? I think the Taimanim until today, did they daven Musaf on Shabbos and Yontif? Only the Shliach Tzibur says it. Where? Go ahead, let me hear.
I think I saw in the Baladi show, yeah, more traditional Rambam Taimanim.
Right.
Only the
Shliach Tzibur, the Spanish Portuguese, and the Baladi Taimanishu, only the Shliach Tzibur. No? So if you start eating away at tradition, you're going to hit away at everything. And thinking of the B'Samim Rosh, get rid of your beard. You're modernizing. You're coming out to the big world. Don't daven so much. And all these Birchat HaShachar and everything, and it's interesting. In Israel, no shul says Birchat HaShachar in public. I said Birchat HaShachar riding down the elevator from the fourth floor to my car to drop off what I'm taking to Gris, and then I walk. By the time I'm out of the parking lot, Birchat HaShachar are behind me. You understand? No shul says Birchat HaShachar. All right, we're different. We know Hebrew. We know how to learn. And originally, of course, Birchat HaShachar was said as you did the actions. When you got off the bed, when you put on your clothes, when you put on your shoes, when you put on your hat. Ota Yisrael b'tifara. All right, there's a lot to give thanksgiving for. But think what he's saying here. Think what he's accomplishing. Think of the seeds that he is planting. Now, just give me one step further and we'll close down. Then, of course, you get involved in the whole question.
Are you Yotzei with Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin?
Let's say Moshe Greenberg only put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Is he Yotzei? Look into the Gemara Menachat, Lamed Hei Amid Aleph. And you see the Gemara discussing the question, if you mix up the Pashiyot, if you change the order, and then the Gemara says, Ella Lo Shna. And what does the Gemara mean? The simple pshat, you can work out the sugya, you'll see. No matter which way you change around the Pashiyot, you're not Yotzei, unless you follow the proper order. That is the simple pshat in the Gemara, the way 99% of the Rishonim learned the pshat. You look in to the Samim Rosh, gives a whole new interpretation. Loshna, the way you would use it in daily language, it doesn't matter. No matter what you do, you are Yotzei. So you see, here you see a very benevolent attitude. Elu v'elu. You can put on Rashi, you can put on Rabbeinu Tam, the Mitnagdim are right, the Sfadim are right, the Hasidim are right. Live and let live. Again, I may be reading too much into it, but you see one of the basic concepts of the encyclopedists, of modernity, of all that has happened in Berlin, of all that has happened outside the ghetto. And I have to tell you something, we are deeply affected by this attitude too. Loshna, live and let live. Clinton's daughter got married to a Jew on Shabbos afternoon. A graduate of this kollel, a prominent rabbi, said publicly, while it's not so nice that they got married, intermarried on Shabbos, but it's fabulous for the Jews that the daughter of the President of the United States can marry a Jew. Should be ripping Kriya. It's the end of the Jewish people. The president of the Jewish Theological Seminary came to the TREF reception that evening. Arnold Eisen. Same name. Arnold is my given name, and Eisen is my middle son-in-law. Wow. I turned up so many Eisens when my daughter married an Eisen. I thought there's one Eisen in the world. Wherever I go, in the Turakata, there's an Eisen. Hey, the Haredit, the based in a great posek, an Eisen. This one's an Eisen. That one's an Eisen. Friday night, I met the people who were my guests. They good, wonderful people. Her maiden name is Eisen. I couldn't believe my ears. Wow. Oh, live and let live. Loshna. We're Jews. We're Americans. We're caught up. The big dream. Democracy. Liberalism. Live and let live. A graduate of this kollel penned the letter. An attitude towards homosexuals. It is normative. You have any idea what that letter means? What it says about Torah, tradition, Toeva, the Rav, etc.? No, live and let live. By the way, no one says to harm, God forbid. Right away they paint the conservative, the liberals paint the conservative a murderer, a killer, or this or that. Chas v'chalila. But there's Torah. There's standards. I had a Rebbe. There's tradition. There's an attitude. I should hear a student of mine tell me this past Sukkot at the hotel, as I told you, we have to reinterpret the sentence where it says Toevnu. We've got to reinterpret the sentence. We're any different than Reformed Jews. Got to rip Kriya when you hear words like that. It's not a small matter. And this is a person who's a Shomer Shabbos. In your age range, Shai. Shomer Shabbos. But this is live and let live. This is modernity. This is the world. This is Lo Shna. It makes no difference. The sugya of the Parshiyot is Lamed Dalet Amid Bet. And I looked at the Odd Scroll translation upstairs. Look at the pictures. Ah, was I born too early? When we learned Gemara, who ever saw pictures? Today, the new Steinsaltz, I just got Chelik Bet Chulin. They haven't sent out Chelik Aleph yet. I paid for it already. I'm waiting for it. I take a look at Chelik Bet. The cow is staring at me. All his inner parts revealed. The chicken is staring at me. Oh my gosh, Gilly, when we learned you're a daya, did we suffer? Did we go through difficulty? You fellas are so lucky that you are growing up at this moment in time. But we had one advantage, Shai, one advantage. A team was a team. There was a team spirit. The player you rooted for was with you till the day he said, if I can't play like Joe DiMaggio, I retire. Today what's going on with Derek Jeter and Mo Rivera, and that we have to read such garbage. HaKesef Yaneh Et HaKol. Am I lucky that I grew up in the 40s into the 50s? I pity you people and what you're exposed to. Lo Shna. Either way, we win, we lose. My dear students, to reiterate, I have a lot of freebies today, so don't run away. Tomorrow is a big day, a heavyweight day, and Shaul Liebman died before that ad was published. I checked it out. I'll talk about it tomorrow.
March
23rd. And you know how he died, right?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. We'll tell the class tomorrow. So I checked it out, but it all fits together like a glove on a hand. And we are heading for pay dirt in the Monday class. God give strength. Not yet tomorrow, but we're within breathing distance. What do we do today? All right, today was an important day. We're well into the summer Rosh now. We're analyzing the Tshuvat. I did raise the issue. Are we reading too much into it? Could be. But overall, even if you're reading too much, you're reading enough. You follow me, Eitan? You get a feeling of what is happening. And he is caught between two worlds. A pitiful figure, a Lamdin Mufak. What a seminal mind. The names he can make up, the stories he can tell. The Mekubal who wouldn't get up to Davin because he's learning Maisa Bereshit. He spoke about shaving. We spoke about davening, the language, the tefillah shorter. We spoke about the tefillin, the Masorah. We spoke about Rabbeinu Tam. We spoke about Rashi. We spoke about the Lo Shana. My dear students, some freebies. You know what freebies are? I get overwhelmed. People send me things. So let me pass on what I can pass on. It makes my wife happy because there's no room for a human in my house. It's all Sfarim and tapes of the Rav. This is the Kalin Stalin of Kiddushei Torah. It's on a very high level. Kovetz Beit Aharon de Yisrael. It's not in English. It's in rabbinic Hebrew. If anyone is a gabbai in a shul, I think you better take this for yitz. This is published for gabbayim. Very fascinating about materials that are available, manufacturing of shuls in Israel. Jerusalem stone for your base mikdash in America. All you have to do is walk in Borough Park and you'll come to the Ungavara's shtibel, and you think you're at the Kotel HaMaravi, and on the other side it's Rachel Imenu, it's Beit Lechem, Kever Rachel. And you can get all the stones here sent across the world. These are Makarot. These are Makarot, very interesting. What did I write one of my master's thesis on, or my MA? I wrote on the divorce in Cleves. A Rav in Mitzpah Yericho, I think it is, or in that area, gave a shiur last Sunday night on the Cleves divorce. And these are sources. He put it into context of many things that happened before, although he doesn't seem to have Rav Moshe here, what happened afterwards. But if you're interested in the topic, these are the sources. I don't know the name of the Rav. I just know it was given as a memorial shiur for Jack Levinstein's brother. This is for Yitz, Rav Asher Weiss. This has come out now. It's available in print. This is Rav Heschel Schechter on tradition. It appears in the latest Jewish Action. I have a feeling, again, I may be reading between the lines, it's against Chovevei Torah. It's interesting to read and see what you think. Oh, excuse me?
That's why people are reading.
People are reading it, so I'm not the only one. Okay, so Baruch Shekivanti, Ledat HaRachov. This is a most fascinating article. And Chabad is Chabad. You can't win them. I don't say you have to join them, but you certainly have to respect them. There's a very famous picture of Baruch Berlebovich, and I have this picture many times over in many volumes. Standing behind him are two youngsters. This is in Dacha, in the summer rest. Did I turn this away again? Oh my gosh. David, you better sit over there and watch me carefully and have a poker to poke it back. There's Rav Baruch Berlebovich. This is a grandson who was killed by Hitler, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro. No one knew who this was. No one knew. He stepped forward and identified himself. He's a Chabad Rav in Montreal today. He's well into his 80s. And you got to read his story. It's unbelievable. And how he comes to Rav Baruch Berlebovich, and then afterwards how he becomes a Chabad Chassid. So that's next. Mishpacha, very interesting on the Sharira and American courts and a decision and a vote, and can you accept it as a source in an American court? And you have to remember, the Supreme Court has already quoted from Rabbi Norman Lamb's writings, Torah sources, in a decision, and here you have the Shariran. There was a whole vote now not to accept it in one of the states. This is front page New York Times, a beautiful story on Rav Avi Steinsaltz and the completion of the Shas in Hebrew, which gives birth to all the other imitators, including Artsville. And this was sent to me by two Talmidim. Bar mitzvah studies take to the web. You don't have to go to shul, you don't have to go to temple. You study with a bar mitzvah teacher over a website. Most fascinating. Finally, a very insightful article, The Experts on Dating, on a convert who converts to Judaism, a woman in her mid-30s, 34, and her problems in finding a shidduch. And you have to read this. I would require everyone going into the rabbinate to read this to give you empathy, not just sympathy. Sympathy is cheap. Empathy means you can identify and feel it a lot deeper. And to everyone I say thank you so much for coming. Our guests as well, until we meet again in health and happiness with a mazel tov. To the future simchis, the kavod u'teferet, the simcha rabba, the human beginning, health and happiness.